help. If you need a new suit, there's no time like the present because the Macy's suit sale won't be back until the fall. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Tonight in Thunder Country, our low around 46 degrees, and Tuesday's going to be a sunny one. Your high around 75 and breezy out there. For our Tuesday on the overnight, rain in the forecast, gusty winds as well, and Wednesday is going to be a wet Wednesday. Maybe a quarter of an inch of precipitation coming in Wednesday daytime. On the overnight, about a tenth of an inch of precipitation on the way. Now it's time for Just Start Talking on Thunder Country. Just Start Talking is a community service program from KIIC. And now with your host, Pat Powers, here's Just Start Talking.
With me for my installment of Just Start Talking, I've got an author of a book, The Word of Dog. Mark Rollins is with me. Mark, thanks for being with me here on KIIC.
Thanks for inviting me. Delighted to be here.
Good deal. I read the book, The Word of Dog, and I got to tell you that I was very, very surprised with the content that it has, but we'll get into that a little bit later on. Well, I want to know a little bit more about your upbringing. You did not grow up in the United States, but talk about where you grew up at.
Yeah, I was born and grew up in a little country called Wales, which is the part of Britain on the west side of England, basically. Many people think we're English, but we're a bit touchy about that.
You want to make certain that perfectly clear right off the bat.
Yeah, thought I better do that.
And so go ahead and tell us a little bit about your upbringing. What do you like to do as a kid there in Wales?
Basically, I played sports of various sorts, you know. Rugby was the main sport in Wales at the time, so I played a lot of that, cricket, and boxing.
Interesting to hear. And at what point in the juncture did you make it over to the United States?
I've been here twice. Originally, I came over in 1988, I think it was. Then I went and lived in Ireland for a while, then in England and in France. And I've been in Miami now for the last 18 years.
So as a world traveler, you've had extensive use of the passport, which is kind of cool to hear. But tell me, now you're with the University of Miami. You've got a certain position there at the University of Miami. Talk about it.
Yeah, I'm a professor of philosophy at the University of Miami, and I'm head or chair of the Department of Philosophy.
You're talking about this book here, The Word of Dog here. I've got Mark Rollins for my edition of Just Start Talking. And Mark, this particular book is very interesting because in particular, you talk about one dog that you've had, but you've also had many, many dogs in your life. But this one dog, particularly Shadow, is the main character of this. But your fascination with canines in terms of their behavior must have piqued your curiosity at what point in your life. Talk about that.
For quite some time. I mean, I've grown up with dogs all my life. I mean, since I was about 3 years old. I had a few dogless years in my 20s when I was at college, but most of my life there have been dogs involved in some way or other. So I think it's difficult to spend that much time around dogs without picking up a thing or two from them in the end, and that's what this book is about. I started writing this book when I had a realization. There's a canal bank that runs, there's a canal that runs behind the house here in Miami. And every morning I'll take Shadow for a walk along the canal. And in the morning, lined up along the canal at roughly regular intervals are scores of iguanas. And so Shadow will tear off up the canal bank. The iguanas will peel off into the water, swim over to the other side, and stay there for the rest of the day. But night is the time of forgetting for iguanas, apparently, because the next morning they'll be lined up on our side again, ready for Shadow to repeat the whole thing all over again. And it struck me eventually that this was a bit like the myth of Sisyphus. Sisyphus was a mortal who offended the god, and they punished him by giving him this task. The task was to roll a large rock up a hill. When he gets to the top, it rolls back down to the bottom, and he has to start all over again. And that for Sisyphus was it, you know, for all eternity. If you replace the rock with iguanas, then that's pretty much Shadow's life. This surprised me because Sisyphus is usually taken to be the epitome of a meaningless life, you know, just this repetitive activity which achieves nothing, aims only at its own continuation. But it seemed to me that, and this was the sort of intuition that I based the book on, this was Shadow's, the most meaningful part of Shadow's day, this chasing of iguanas over and over again, one day to the next. So I wanted to work on how it is that Shadow finds meaning and fulfillment in this sort of repetitive activity, because if he can, then this solves the problem of Sisyphus. But the problem that Sisyphus poses for us humans is that our lives seem to be recognizably Sisyphean. They seem to be very much like the life of Sisyphus. So, you know, we get up in the morning, we fight our way to work, we do our 8 hours or whatever it is at work. Our results are probably quite modest, and they'll soon be wiped away by time's passage. Then we go home, maybe waiting for us at home are children, maybe not, but if there are, then in a few years' time, they'll grow up and do pretty much the same sorts of things. So the challenge posed by Sisyphus then is that Sisyphus' life is meaningless, and our lives are recognizably like that of Sisyphus. Shadows, without understanding there was a problem there at all, seems to have solved this problem by finding meaning and fulfillment in this kind of repetitive, pointless activity. That's what interested me, and that's why I started writing the book.
Well, that's very intriguing. I'm talking with Mark Rawlins, and I failed to say that this book is full of items like Greek mythology, psychology, physiology. Socrates and Plato come into the book as well. But one of the items that you talked about early in the book is dogs don't do self-examination. And that's something that some people don't even realize, you know, your unexamined life. Talk about that part.
Yeah, so reflection or self-examination is the ability to think about yourself, about what you're doing and why you're doing it. And we humans, we're the sort of world heavyweight champions of this sort of thing. And once you have this ability to think about your life, to reflect on it, then it's like your life splits into two. There's the life that you lead, and there's also the life that you think about, that you examine, that you scrutinize, criticize, that you sometimes agonize over. So we humans have these two lives. A dog doesn't do this sort of reflection, so it only has one life. And I think that's part of the story about why dogs love their lives more than we love ours.
Yeah, because as humans, they need to think about who they are and how they should live and could they have done better and am I happy and how my life is going and does life have any meaning? So all of those things, it makes it harder for the humans as opposed to the canines where it's quote-unquote carefree, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think what we should remember, like when it comes to existing, then it's always a matter of swings and roundabouts. You gain some things and you lose some things. So the ability to reflect or self-examine is very good. It brings lots of advantages, but it also brings some notable disadvantages. At least that's the message of the book. It brings notable disadvantages, including a kind of dissatisfaction that goes with one life being split into two. So, yeah, because we worry about things like, you know, the path not taken. Should I have done this rather than that, you know, and so on and so on. A dog doesn't worry about, well, you know, when I was out on that walk, I picked up this stick, but perhaps I should have picked up that other stick. that's not the sort of thing a dog does. And that inability to think about yourself comes with notable advantages.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, there was another item when you talked about dogs are creatures of commitment while humans are creatures of doubt. Explain that part.
Well, this stems from this ability to reflect or self-examine. So, suppose you believe something. It doesn't matter what. You have this belief. And as soon as you believe something, when you're a human, you can start questioning it. Oh, I believe this, but perhaps I shouldn't believe it. Is there enough evidence to believe this? Is there evidence against it? And so on. What will other people think of me if they know I believe this? And so on and so on. So we don't just have beliefs. Our beliefs are always troubled. And what makes them troubled is our ability to think about them, reflect on them, and examine them. A creature with troubled beliefs and troubled other mental states in the end, turns out to be a troubled creature. That is what I was talking about when I talked about humans as being creatures of doubt. As soon as we have a belief, as soon as we believe anything or want anything, we start questioning. And in this sense, we're creatures of doubt. Dogs don't do that. They just believe things and they get on with acting on the basis of what they believe. And so they're untroubled in the opposite sort of sense. They're not their beliefs are not troubled ones. They don't worry about things like that. They just get on with believing.
Well, this is a great book in terms of for people to think, and that's one thing that humans are able to do and comprehend. We're talking about the book of The Word of Dog by Mark Rowlands. He's a professor there at University of Miami in Miami. This book really makes people contemplate their own life as well, Mark. To me, that's what it seems like. Even though you're talking about your dog Shadow, it more in reality makes the person reading the book think about themselves as well in terms of how they go about their business. Am I off base there?
No, that's exactly right. You're absolutely right. That was the goal of the book. It's a book about humans as well as a book about dogs. It's a book about the human predicament, about our strengths and our weaknesses, and how we might address some of those weaknesses. I mean, what one thing dogs do, when you can reflect on your life as a whole, then you can start to think things about, well, where is this life going? And we all know where it ends up.
Good. Right.
And when you get to a certain age in your life, and I'm there, I have to admit, you know, you understand your sort of your physical strengths and weaknesses. You understand how things may end, and that can be overwhelming. So I was struck by something that happened to Shadow. This was back in April last year. The book was already in press, so I couldn't write about it in the book. So this is sort of new stuff. We were out running one day, and a few miles from home, he gave the loud shriek, dropped to the ground. His back legs were paralyzed. The vet thinks it was a spinal embolism where a bit of cartilage had got into his blood supply leading to the spine. The blood supply was cut off. His back legs were paralyzed. So this raised various issues like, you know, how am I going to get him home and so on. But there was something he did when all this was going on that really kind of struck me, you know, and he was lying, he'd fallen, and he was lying in the sun. And in Miami, the sun's not a good place to lie in. So what he did, he wouldn't let me anywhere near him to help because he was very frightened. But what he did is he used his front leg to drag himself to the shade. About 20 feet away, he dragged himself into the shade. And I thought this is a great example of valuing the marginally positive. So so this terrible thing has just happened to him, but he thinks in this way, at least now, this minute, is slightly better than the one before. Right? At least now I'm not, okay, I'm still paralyzed, but at least I'm not in the sun anymore. So this minute is slightly better than the one that came before. And I think that is a good antidote to being caught up with and overwhelmed by everything that life has sort of in store for us.
Very interesting. And I like that analogy of he helping himself get to that shade. There's a part of the book that is quoted from Alfred North Whitehead, and it talks about looking at the left side of the face to see what the right side of the brain is thinking. And of course, that's, you know, nothing new, but some people need to have a refresher course about that. Talk about that.
Well, there is a thing. Dogs are really good at reading our emotions. And one of the things people have discovered is they get a left gaze bias, which means they look at the right side of the face, which, since it's controlled by the left side of the brain, is a more accurate reflection of what we're thinking and feeling. So that's one way dogs can... that's one thing dogs do to help read us. There's also an interesting study done by the University of Vienna, which showed that dogs can distinguish in photographs, not sort of actual, physically present faces, but in photographs, they can distinguish angry faces from happy faces. And so dogs are very good at reading our emotions. I mean, you mentioned Whitehead. Whitehead was talking not about reading of emotions, but about thinking. And I think you made a very good point that, you know, thinking is hard, and if you don't have to do it, why would you?
Exactly.
And one thing dogs have also become very good at is getting us to do their thinking for them. We're like their sort of, their extended minds. Things that would be difficult for them to do become easy because they offload the difficulty onto us and get us to do the thinking for them.
I'm talking with Mark Rowland. He's got this book entitled The Word of Dog. There was another part of the book, I believe, that talked about Hugo's last day, subjective engagement, as humans have two lives, the body as an object, and then the body as lived. Speak on that just a little bit there, Mark.
Hugo's last day was very sad, but also very uplifting in a certain way. There was a lot to learn from it. He had problems with his hips. He was a German Shepherd. The problems got really severe one Christmas day back in 2016, I think it was. And it was clear, because we knew this day was coming. We'd known it for some time. But it was clear that he needed to be euthanized because of the pain he was in. Unfortunately, since it was Christmas Day, it was very difficult to get hold of the vet, and we had to wait a day for that. There was one thing he did. When the vet was on his way to euthanize him, we got the vet to come around to the house. Hugo had a bike sleeve. He loved to play with his bike sleeve. A bite sleeve is something I put on my arm and then the dog bites it. Hugo loves it. He was going to shoot me around the garden like a rag doll when he was younger. What do you like now? He was no longer up for that sort of thing, but he did like to sort of fetch his bite sleeve, and I threw it for him. And so this dying dog and I go out the garden. I start throwing the bite sleeve for him, and he starts picking it up and bringing it back, and for a while, just for a few, after 10 minutes or so, he looks like the Hugo of old, the Hugo who wasn't dying. I almost called the vet and said, "Don't bother. He's got a lot better." But as soon as we stopped this activity, pain returned, and it was clear it was very severe. So Hugo died that day, but I thought he died quite magnificently through the love of what he did, this activity. Playing with a bite sleeve, he managed to sort of hold death at bay for a little while.
You know, that's the great thing about pets of all sorts. You get attached. They are family, and it's very difficult to let them go when they do pass. That is something that grabs a lot of people and makes it very, very difficult sometimes to carry on, but we do. I appreciate your time, Mark. I've been talking with Mark Rowlands. He's the author of The Word of Dog, and you also have another book as well, The Philosopher and the Wolf. Talk about that real quick, if you could.
Oh, that was the story of the 10 years or so I was fortunate enough to spend living and traveling with a wolf hybrid who I named Brennan. So it it talks about sort of a journey from the United States over to Ireland, to England, to France, and there's a sort of it's a philosophically inspired memoir, but primarily it is a memoir, a story of a day spent together.
Wow. Wow, really cool, really cool. Folks, if you want to listen to this edition of Just Start Talking, you can go to our website at www.kiicradio.com and select that Listen Live tab at the top of the banner there. And on the right side, you'll be able to see this podcast of Just Start Talking with Mark Rollins or any other Just Start Talking episode that we have. Mark, real quick before you leave, tell us how people can get a hold of these books for themselves, because quite frankly, they're intriguing and thought-provoking.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very kind of you. Yeah. No, I mean, they can be bought wherever books are sold, basically, the usual places.
All right.
Any bookstore, whether physical or online.
Very good. Very good. Mark Rollins, thank you for your time today to be with me on KIIC.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
I don't know why I can't do the right thing and just let her be. But it's 4 in the morning, and what's more, the dawning just woke up the warning in me. Last night I told her this time it's all over, making 10 times I told her goodbye. Last night we broke up, this morning I woke up, and for the 10th time I'm changing my mind. I saw more love in her eyes when I left her than more foolish man will ever see. And it's 4 in the morning, and once more the dawning just woke up the warning in me. It's 4 in the morning, and once more the dawning just woke up the warning. Just got tired of that same old job, tired of fighting that freeway mob. I bet you never thought I'd really go, I'd never get as far as Mexico. I've even learned to speak the language some, down on the beach drinking coke and rum. You wouldn't know me with this gold sun in Mexico. I'm eating right and I'm living good, doing everything I said I would. I should have left a long time ago. Who needs you? I've got Mexico. That's a shame. I still love you, that's the way it goes. He's got you, I've got Mexico. But I'm eating right and I'm living good, I'm doing everything I said I would. I should have left a long time ago. Who needs you? I've got Mexico. I've got Mexico. I'm eating right and I'm living.
I got Mexico, Eddie Raven, for you on your St. Paddy's Day as we're navigating through this question of the day where 50% of ladies have this in their purse. We've already run down some items that it's not. It's not keys. They have keys, but that's not the answer. Chapstick, lipstick, perfume, glasses, eyewear, and no, not that.
Did I say I wouldn't be hurt if our love just didn't work? Did I say that I'd be okay if you said goodbye? And did I promise you I could take it if we were
have known her way back then. Lord, you asked me why I don't pack up and leave her. Now that I know about her wicked ways, well, I doubt that you could understand my thinking. Oh, but listen close to what I have to say. She's the rock that I lean on.
sunshine of my days.